Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump has signed two executive actions designed to enhance U.S. security, the more far-reaching of which restricts any Syrian refugees from entering the United States for an indefinite period of time. Friday's executive order, titled Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist Entry into the United States, calls for suspension of visas and other immigration benefits to citizens of countries of particular concern.
I'm establishing new vetting measures to keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the United States of America. We don't want them here. We want to ensure that we are not admitting into our country the very threats our soldiers are fighting overseas.
President Trump met with British Prime Minister Theresa May at the White House, then spoke with reporters in a joint news conference.
After his first White House meeting with the world leader,
this is our first visit, so great honor.
President Donald Trump said he hopes to develop good relations with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
I don't know the gentleman. I hope we have a fantastic relationship. That's possible, and it's also possible that we won't.
During a joint briefing with British Prime Minister Theresa May, Trump said it's too early to determine whether to lift sanctions on Russia for backing separatists in eastern Ukraine and annexing Crimea. Russians' actions raised tensions with NATO, which Trump has criticized as obsolete. But May said both reaffirmed their support for the alliance.
We're united in our recognition of NATO as the bulwark of our collective defense.
While the two acknowledged their differences, they also renewed what Trump called their nation's special relationship. Mary Alice Salinas, VOA News, the White House.
And this is VOA News. U.S. President Donald Trump has spoken by phone with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto, a conversation Trump described as very friendly a day after he canceled a planned trip to Washington. Trump said the talk lasted for about an hour and said the two of them will be working on a fair relationship, a new relationship. However, Trump also said that the two countries will be renegotiating trade deals and said he will make sure the United States does not lose on trade. Britain's Foreign Minister Boris Johnson says Bashar al-Assad should be allowed to seek another term as Syria's president if any agreement is reached to end the country's nearly six-year-long civil war. The United States and its Western allies have long insisted that Assad must relinquish power in Syria as part of any peace agreement. A U.S. research institute that monitors North Korean weapons development says the communist country has likely resumed operations at a plutonium reactor at a nuclear facility. The website 38north.org posted commercial satellites images, it said, indicate that Pyongyang is preparing to restart the reactor after previously recovering spent fuel rods, which can be used to produce weapons-grade plutonium. Reported activities by North Korea are the latest in a series of defiant acts amid numerous United Nations sanctions enacted in response to the North's atomic and ballistic missile development programs. Italy's Coast Guard says it has rescued about 1,000 migrants from leaky boats in the Mediterranean, while one person was found dead. More than 180,000 migrants reached Italy last year, a record number. The United Nations says more than 5,000 people died last year trying to cross the Mediterranean. Serena Williams has defeated her sister Venus in straight sets 6-4, 6-4 in the finals of the Australian Open tennis tournament. Serena captures her 23rd major singles title, setting a record. She had been tied with Steffi Graf at 22 major titles, and Venus celebrated her sister's victory.
Yeah, it's a great number. I know she would like to have a little more. Who wouldn't? And it was a great moment, and I'm very happy that she's been able to, get to number 23, because there's 22 ahead of that that she also earned, and she earned it.
It was also the seventh Australian Open title for Serena Williams, to go along with her seven titles at Wimbledon, six at the U.S. Open, and three at the French Open. Twice Oscar-nominated British actor John Hurt has died at the age of 77. He's best known for the films Midnight Express and The Elephant Man. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington.
Some of us who are raising these issues, we are simply concerned about the credibility of our ministers of state and the assurance that they will not be leading this country into deal.
A Ghanaian parliamentary committee vets prospective cabinet ministers.
There is a public outcry following Mr. Museveni's statement, and people really are wondering whose interest is he serving.
Ugandan President Museveni comes under criticism for saying he's not anybody's servant.
We must prepare the register, and by preparing the register, we will have to deduplicate or, you know, just check that who's tried to register twice and remove errors and all that, and then we certify the register.
And the Kenyan electoral body warns prospective voters it will not extend the period of the voter registration process. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Ghanaian Parliamentary Appointment Committee is vetting prospective ministers for President Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo's government. Bwachi Ejeakpo, an experienced banker who until 2007 was a vice president for a bank in New York, is the designated energy minister whose vetting generated controversy. For reaction, I reached minority parliamentarian Suhuyini Al-Hassan, a member of the Parliamentary Appointment Committee.
The issue with Bwacha Ejeakpo, what we are looking at are a number of issues. Some allegations you raised relating to the power sector that we have requested that he furnish us with information to justify those allegations. And then some charges, again, that he raised about the previous government, charges of corruption that we have asked him to substantiate. But of interest to me has to do with his past official, you know, duty as vice president of New York Bank. As captured in his CV, since he resigned from that bank and returned to Ghana, he has done no work. My question to him had to do with how he discontinued his service at the bank, how he left the bank, as to whether he was fired, he resigned. I was especially interested in that because of the controversies that bank has been involved in the past in relation to money laundering, in relation to fraud.
Did Parliament send Ghanaian officials to investigate or ascertain what this was about to ensure that the minister designate is clean and could not be blackmailed in the future with such an information?
That was what I was pushing for. But unfortunately, the chairman of the committee, who is a government member of parliament, did not allow that and suggested that the question was irrelevant and had no basis in our standing order. And it was rejected on those basis. But of concern to me is the public interest and the fact that it will be important that we are clear in our minds that our incoming Minister for Energy played no role whatsoever in those scandals that hit the bank in 2011 and also before that.
Critics of the appointment committee, particularly those in the minority side, have a personal grudge against Mr. Bwachi Ejeakpo. Do you have a personal animosity against him?
This is nothing personal. In fact, Mr. Bwachi Ejeakpo is a Ghanaian citizen and one that many citizens should be proud of if you look at what he is supposed to have done with his life in the past. But this is about service to the nation. And for some of us who are raising these issues, we are simply concerned about the credibility of our ministers of state and the assurance that they will not be leading this country into deals. I'm sure you know about the Russian connection. I'm sure you also know that the Russian connection involved in this money laundering also have interest in gas, and they have companies that have interest in oil. And so it is for those issues that we want to be clear in our minds that he will not be doubling in. He has no relationship with those companies and have no hand whatsoever in those scandals.
Well, I understand the regular Ghanaian tradition is to have somebody who is supposedly humble, and that this is coming to play in the vetting of Bwachi Ejiakọ because he is supremely confident, and that this is a way for the minority, so to speak, to clamp down on him and show him what, in quote, Ghanaian say power lies. Is that the move here?
That at all is not the mood. I don't see that at all among the committee members. We understand individual, you know, character differences, and we cannot begrudge him if he is abrasive and he appears very bold and confident or even snobbish. What is of concern is that is the Ghanaian interest and need for us to have assurance that he will not be doubling in things that will eventually embarrass the nation.
Is there a concerted effort by the minority to undermine the new administration that is trying to set up a government to effectively keep the promises that President Akufo-Addo made to Ghanaians? Is this the case?
Not at all. In fact, we have a Ghanaian proverb from my locality in Kamali that says that only a fool cuts the branch that he sits on. We have only one Ghana. We are all living in that country, and it will not be in our interest to want to frustrate the new government. We, like our president, the former president John Dramani Mahama said, wish the new government well. We actually pray that it succeeds, and we will play every role that we can to facilitate the work of that government. And that is the attitude among all of us in the minority.
Thank you very much, Mr. Alassane, for speaking.
What we will not compromise, however, if I may add, what we will not compromise is the fact that the Ghanaian interest must be protected at all times.
Suhuyini Alhassan is a member of the Ghanaian Parliamentary Appointment Committee. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is coming under criticism for saying he's not anybody's servant. His remark came in a speech as he celebrated his 31 years as leader of the East African country. Museveni says he is only a freedom fighter who fights for his beliefs. But opposition and civil society groups condemned his pronouncement as an affront to the Constitution. For more on this story, I reach Jeffrey Sebagala from the Unwanted Witness, a civil society organization in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
There is a public outcry following Mr. Museveni's statement, and people really are wondering whose interest is he serving. But on a number of occasions, even he was being interviewed in Nairobi, Kenya, by one of the journalists, and he said he was working for his family and his grandchildren. But to me, as a Ugandan, first of all, really, I'm not surprised, because Mr. Museveni, the way he has been managing the affairs of the country, he seemed to be managing his home or his personal business. Remember when Uganda discovered oil? He has been singing, "My oil, my oil, my oil." When there were changes, when Ugandans were saying, I think they are tired of the personalized army, and it was transformed from NRA to Uganda People Defense Forces, he started actually saying, give up on my army, give up on my army. And now, saying that actually is not a servant, to me, I think he's drunk with power.
If he's been saying this for a long time, why the outcry? People are aware that this is what he's been saying. He said he came by the barrel of the gun. He is a freedom fighter. Why are people surprised, and why are they all arms about this?
Yeah, well, it is an issue of a now election. If really he has been coming to Ugandans, really asking them to vote him back in power, and he has been promising sorts of things, it seems really he's not a straightforward person. And that tells you that such a statement really puts an issue of credibility on our electoral process. Because if really he thinks, which I think the opposition has been really crying that Museveni has been rigging election, then I think it is coming out clearly from him that nobody votes him, whether they vote him or not. What really I'm getting out of his statement he made is like he votes himself in that office. So if he really trusted and he believed that Ugandans really had a say over his team, I wouldn't expect him to make such a statement. Actually, personally, I fear the future of Uganda.
I understand that in his 1986 inaugural speech, He said that the government must be a servant of citizens. But can't the man change his mind?
Exactly.
Because he is now experienced. He's managed the affairs of the country for 31 years. Can't he change his mind on setting preconceived ideas he had previously? Because he's changed. He's even written a book saying African leaders stay in power for too long and that there must be changes. Can't he change his mind just like anybody else?
He cannot, really. What we saw in Gambia is likely to happen in Uganda, where someone is ousted out. Either Ugandans through deciding via a ballot or Ugandans going on the streets and calling for the end of his long tenure. The state institutions are getting personalized. State institutions are facing the problem of actual independence and credibility. So everything seems to be really being personalized by him. So the army, he calls it his army. Judiciary, he has appointed his cadre judges. Parliament, really, you find that there's really no independence of parliament. He wants parliament to operate under his armpit. When you look at the, education is really in a state. Our health system is completely down. So there's no change, none whatsoever. He's looking at his survival.
Jeffrey, the Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister, Kahinda Otafiri, defended President Museveni and saying that since President Museveni is fighting for his beliefs, just like every other Ugandan does, he is right to do so. He said he's a freedom fighter who is fighting for his beliefs. What is wrong with that?
But what's the difference between Kahinda Otafiri and Museveni? He has been serving with him. He even actually lost an election. That tells you that they have lost real popularity. So I wouldn't take his comments or statements serious, because him and Museveni, they are the one, and he can say whatever he wants, but the situation is not going to change. Citizens of this country, majority of them are tired of this prolonged regime in Uganda. Otherwise, I think majority of Ugandans want to see a change. He's only looking at really money for him, for the army, and that is all, to keep him in power. So, to me, literally, there's nothing much which is going to change, none whatsoever.
Jeffrey Sebagala is from the Unwanted Witness, a Ugandan civil society organization. He spoke with me from Kampala. The Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, has cautioned prospective voters that it will not extend the period for the compilation of the voter list to be used for the August election. The compilation process is expected to end February 14. Officials of the electoral body, however, also expressed confidence that the new commission will ensure that the polls are free and fair. For more, I reach Andrew Limo, IEBC Director of Communications.
We cannot afford to extend for two main reasons. One is the timelines. We must prepare the register. And by preparing the register, we will have to deduplicate or, you know, just check that who's tried to register twice and remove errors and all that. And then we certify the register. And that takes a bit of time. We also want to embark on the diaspora, and there's quite a lot of work. Secondly, is that we don't have the resources even to do that, even if we wanted to. So this really makes it that's the end of it.
The IEBC also mentioned that the registration of prisoners will begin from February 20 to 27. Why this timeline? And tell me more about this directive.
Yeah, this there's been a Supreme Court decision about the registration of prisoners, and the commission has resolved to gazette prisons as registration centers based on the data that we receive from the State Department for Correctional Services. So out of that, we've identified prisoners that we will go there and register prisoners. We will also, next week, the commission will be making a decision on the diaspora vote and where they will be registered and we roll out. So you realize that for the local registration, then we must stop so that we embark on the other voters.
Talking about the diaspora vote, I heard there's controversy around the number of Kenyans in the diaspora. Are you in charge of a figure
or an approximate figure of Kenyans in the diaspora who will be participating in future elections per this voter list that you're compiling?
We've had several ways of trying to determine, and that has not been very easy, but including a survey that we did on our website and the data that we received from the Minister of Foreign Affairs and other sources. I think there's a group, the Commission group will be deciding next week based on that information they have and how this is going to be done. So, well, I wouldn't preempt that, and I don't know how the direction that will come out of that, but certainly that is a decision to be made next week.
The attitude of some people is that they can register at the last minute, so usually there's a rush. What is the IEBC doing about this, encouraging Kenyans to come in rather than wait till the last minute and rush in to register?
We've stepped up our campaign to urge people and to let them know that there will be no extension. We launched this morning the annual Voter Education Week to run parallel with the registration exercise. We are kind of happy that our clans, the politicians, are moving around and mobilizing, though sometimes they pass messages that we don't agree with in terms of appealing to them, because it takes a little bit of political campaign. But I think overall we are happy that they're doing mobilization and awareness, and I think that we, for the first time, we have more numbers coming out to register. But of course, there's not much we can do about a culture other than appeal to people and educate them.
Andrew Limo is the Director of Communications at the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Meanwhile, the Kenyan opposition Orange Democratic Movement has demanded the suspension of the registration of citizens in the diaspora. There's disagreement on the number of Kenyans living abroad, with the opposition expressing fears the numbers could be used to manipulate the elections. Isaac Ongiri is a senior political reporter for the Kenyan newspaper, The Daily Nation. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in the capital, Nairobi, to find out more about the issue.
There is an uncertainty on the numbers, actually, because, you know, nobody actually knows the actual number of Kenyans living abroad. There are claims that there could be 1.5 million Kenyans living abroad, but the opposition insists that the number is less than 200,000. The Electoral Commission has also made some complaints that they have been unable to access data on actual numbers of Kenyans living in the diaspora. Also, there are complaints that the Kenyan embassy in Washington is issuing ID cards to Kenyans or persons born to Kenyan nationals in the United States for purposes of issuing them with passports so that they can participate in the coming elections. That is the disagreement.
Would this be the first time Kenyans in the diaspora would be voting in Kenyan elections?
You know, this idea was brought forth by the new constitution passed in 2010. And in the 2013 elections, Kenyans living in the diaspora were unable to participate in that election, save for Kenyans living in the neighboring East African countries, especially Tanzania and Uganda. So this will be the first time the Kenyans living abroad will be participating in these elections. And actually, they had to fight for it through court. And the Electoral Commission appealed against a ruling earlier made by the High Court before the Court of Appeal finally ruled that these Kenyans should be allowed to participate in the election. What is more is that they are also supposed to participate in all the six elections, including that of the members of the County Assembly.
So is it true that no government agency, no Kenyan government agency, has the exact number of Kenyans living abroad?
There was a mapping exercise launched by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs early last year just to find out the exact number of Kenyans living abroad. And this was also done by the IEBC, but the IEBC one was not successful because just about 1,000 Kenyans living in the diaspora responded. They thought that a lot of details was being sought by the commission that could have been used especially to betray or could have been shared by the authorities in the U.S., especially for Kenyans, for illegal immigrants in the U.S.
Finally, Isaac, is there agreement on the modality of voting? Should they succeed in having them vote? I'm talking about electronic voting vis-a-vis paper ballots. Is there an agreement on that?
Kenyans abroad have different lobby groups through which they use to communicate with government and other institutions in Kenya. They are supposed to be registered manually, just like it is happening right now in Kenya. This evening, the Electoral Commission has just issued a statement indicating that they will actually proceed with the registration of Kenyans living abroad from next month to register them as voters. Voting will be manual. Registration will be through BVR, just like they are doing in Kenya at the moment.
Isaac Ongiri is a senior political reporter with the Kenyan newspaper The Daily Nation. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Nairobi. Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe arrived home Friday after his annual holiday in Asia. Mugabe, one of the longest-serving rulers, came into a fresh debate both inside and outside his party on whether it is time for him to step down. For VOA, Sebastian Nhofu reports from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
No members of the media were invited to the airport to cover President Mugabe's arrival late Friday. It may not be the homecoming Mugabe expects.
I will simply say, President Mugabe, welcome. You did a lot for this country. But I think for now, the time to go is now.
Raymond Majongwe is the head of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He is one of the thousands of civil servants still waiting on their year-end bonuses. The government delayed their salaries repeatedly over the past year. Majongwe says Mugabe's opulent holidays abroad are increasingly out of step with economic realities.
In a country that has no roads, no drugs, education is under trial, everything is not there, water drainage systems, it's just a catastrophe.
Zimbabwe has been dealing with a severe cash shortage, and the United Nations says as many as 5 million people still need food aid until March when the harvesting starts. Last year saw unprecedented protests in the capital over human rights and the economy. Leaders of veterans of the country's liberation war, a key source of support, left Mugabe's side. This week, South African opposition leader Julius Malema even called for Mugabe to resign. The president has also lost some support from within his own party as competition heats up over who will succeed him. In an interview with VOA, a senior member of the ruling ZANU-PF, Kudzai Chipanga, dismissed the critics and said the party is planning festivities for Mugabe's 93rd birthday next month.
The celebrations are important to Zimbabweans, just like how Christians celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, because they look upon Jesus as our savior. But locally, we as Zimbabweans, we also view our president, Comrade Arajim Mugabe, as our local savior as well, as our liberator.
Mugabe has ruled Zimbabwe since independence in 1918. Before the president left for vacation in December, he accepted his party's nomination to run for another term in the 2018 elections. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And it's time for music from our African collection.
Africa lady, oh, aye. See, I sing in the song for Panya, aye. And I dance in the dance for Panya, oh. I would do anything for Panya,
anything, yeah.
And I thank you the Lord for Panya, eh.
What is my baby?
Carry bro me way. Fish no get feather, love way I get no get weather. Kaki no so leather, fish no get feather, the love way I get no get weather.
Oh, na 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 na. Talk to the news and nobody hate you. Tell only Wally, oh. Say me too, oh. A beautiful girl like you, need man like me. I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Man like me. A beautiful girl like you, need man like me. I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Like me, because you know to let that fish not get fed up. In love way I get no get weather, no get weather. So you know to let that fish not get fed up. In love way I get no get weather, no get weather. Yeah. Baby girl, you my one and only. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anything that you want, just holler with me, no. Yeah, yeah. Say I'm your man, your salon bubble, no, 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 yeah, yeah. Say mama, don't beat me, say for you sake, I'm ready for die, yeah. Take bullets for you, me, I'm not afraid of you. Tell you what, tell you what. Talk to the news and all about it, oh, oh, oh. Tell you what, tell you what. Ah, tell only what, oh. Tell you what, tell you what. Ah, say me too, oh, beautiful girl like you, need man like me. I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Man like me. A beautiful girl like you, need man like me. I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Man like me. Because you no go leather, fish no get fed up. In love way I get no get weather, no get weather. So you no go leather. No get better, in love way I get no get better, no get better. Baby, you know me, I'm your man, I can be a better man. Baby, you know me, oh. Baby, you know me, your man, I can be a better man. Baby, you know me, no. If you don't want me, I don't understand, but take my life away, cause you're the one, my only hope. Baby, you're the one and all. Nothing can separate me from you, no. Oh, baby, yeah. Oh, oh, oh. I believe a girl like you, need man like me. I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Man like me. A beautiful girl like you, need man like me. I'm always gonna make you feel alright. Man like me. Because you know to let that fish not get fed up. In love way I get no get weather, no get weather. So you know to let that fish not get fed up. In love way I get no get weather, no get weather.
Throw the dice, you. Oh,
girl, I'm loving your size so. There is no deceiving. With you, girl, I'm winning. The way you do the things you do, you make me scream what I'm feeling. Oh, girl, you give me the healing. I'm down for your feeling. The way you do the things you do, you make me scream what I'm feeling. Said I'm so in love with you, baby. Let's go put this love on you. Don't go low. Don't go low, yeah, don't go low. Don't go low. Don't go low, yeah, don't go low. Don't go low. Don't go low, yeah, don't go low. Don't go low.
Jumbo low, up I'm gonna get today, my baby. Then go no, say me and you will not be play, my baby. Then go say anything where they wanna say, my baby. We go be anything that we wanna be. I'm in love with you, baby girl, I'm in love with you. Wanna dance with you, baby girl, wanna dance with you. Baby, click a tie, if I get on a demon mouth. Baby, dance to my sukus. Baby, muna gige be.
Dumbolo, yeah, dumbolo. Dumbolo. Dumbolo, yeah, dumbolo. Dumbolo, yeah, dumbolo. 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 Dumbolo, yeah, dumbolo. Dumbolo.
My sweetie potato. My dumbolo. My sweetie potato.
Show them.
Mr. Flame,
shake it.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, Justin Thwaites, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, for no man could be blessed without the acceptance of his own head. I'm your host, Peter Clotta in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A precision airstrike conducted recently by manned and unmanned U.S. aircraft against a training camp in Syria's Idlib province killed more than 100 al-Qaeda fighters, said Pentagon spokesman Navy Captain Jeff Davis. In a statement, Davis said that Sheikh Suleiman training camp had been operational since at least 2013. The removal of this training camp disrupts training operations and discourages hardline Islamist and Syrian opposition groups from joining or cooperating with al-Qaeda on the battlefield, said Captain Davis. Since January 1, 2017, U.S. strikes have killed more than 150 al-Qaeda terrorists, including Mohammed Habib Boussadoun al-Tunisi, an external operations leader killed January 17th. He was involved in facilitating Islamic extremism and external operations and had been connected to terrorist plots to attack Western targets. Al-Tunisi arrived in Syria in 2014 after spending several years in countries across Europe and the Middle East, where he maintained ties with multiple Islamic extremists, according to Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook. The terrorist's death, Cook said, will degrade al-Qaeda's pool of experienced, well-connected facilitators and fighters with external operations experience. Abdal Jalil al-Muslimi, a facilitator associated with a network plotting terror attacks in the West, was killed January 12th. Muslimi, a Tunisian, was trained by the Taliban in the late 1990s, when he facilitated travel for the terror group, according to Press Secretary Cook. Muslimi also had extensive and long-standing ties to numerous al-Qaeda external operations planners and terrorists. Muslimi's role will be difficult for al-Qaeda to fill, Mr. Cook said, and the United States will continue to take action to deny these terrorists a safe haven in Syria from which to plot to attack the United States, its allies, or its interests. These strikes, conducted in quick succession, degrade al-Qaeda's capabilities, weaken their resolve, and cause confusion in their ranks, said Captain Davis. We will continue to exert unrelenting pressure to defeat violent extremist groups across the globe.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.